jam song. I wrote a jam song. It's just two sentences. That says, I put it here, and I put the translation on the back. We just say, our gem is vibrant. We are proud leaders. Okay? So I'm going to start. Sunu gem bi yenga tu. You need to help me, Tako. Sunu gem bi yenga tu na. Sunu gem bi yenga tu na. Danu am faida. Danu am faida. Sunu gem bi yenga tu na. Okay, get up. Great. Okay. Now let's go to the serious business.
This will be the anthem.
Okay. So we go. Yesterday you talked about. There was a great presentation that I missed about the financial crisis, and several people I spoke with told me we learned so much. All of the underlying causes, you know, deepening the understanding, seeing the dimensions for developing countries. Looking into what IMF is asking countries and what, and suggesting what countries should be saying, but you know we didn't get into the gender dimension, and I think that was a very good foundation for us to really go into detail about what the crisis meant for developing countries, but also what are the linkages between, you know, developed countries, because the global south is affected, but developed and developing countries are equally now shaken. Which is, we were used to be really under such an adjustment, and we are used to have had a series of crises, Asian crisis in the 90s and Latin America, crisis of the 70s, what was global but really impacted developing countries, in particular African countries. So it was good to go into deep discussion. We decided that now we want to start looking at what are the gendered implications, and how does it, you know, reflect into really, you know, women's lives and men's lives, and in particular people who are living in the global south. So we wanted to really organize this session into a conversation. We know that several of you come from countries that have been having, you know, several series of crises, and that have been in, like Sub-Saharan Africa, continuous crisis of adjustment and stabilization that doesn't seem to be ending in result. We had a great presentation today about countries in transition. So I think now we can start, even if we have not been able in our countries to look at the impact, we can start seeing after, you know, hearing what has been presented today relating to some of these aspects that we can see. And we also have people who are policymakers here and who have been really at the forefront of making policy in their countries and can also help us understand these aspects. So we decided that it was going to be more a conversation, especially handing you out some piece of questions for you to look at individual questions or a few questions that you could start answering. So we just wanted to kind of highlight a few points that we feel can be guiding us in terms of how do you look at transmission processes, transmission routes of the crisis. Maybe, Rania, you want to say something? Or I can
sure.
Go on. Okay.
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 Would you like me to start?
Sure.
Yes, yes. Okay. So I guess the... I guess a starting point would be to say, to repeat a little bit what Yassine said, that this crisis really comes on top of other crises. This crisis has received a lot of attention, and several countries have introduced stimulus packages, as Jan told us yesterday, But how countries are being affected depends on the exact location the country occupies within the global division of production, the global division of labor, and the global assignment of financial linkages. So some countries were interlinked, actually, but financially, but a lot of the developing countries were expecting that there will be a kind of decoupling because of the trajectories of development that have been taking place in the last, let's say, 10 years. Well, we know that that has not happened, but the paths of transmission for developing countries have been very different than what we had during the Asian crisis, during the Mexican crisis, the peso crisis, et cetera, et cetera. We don't want to spend time discussing these differences because they have been alluded to and we can engage in that discussion. What we want to start out with is to say that how women get affected is clearly very much dependent on both the country that they live in, but also the position they occupied at the time of the crisis. And the outcomes are not uniform, clearly. Even when we think of a food crisis, when we think of the spike of fuel prices, it was mentioned yesterday that not everybody is a loser. If you are the producer, if you are the exporting country, you will see actually your reserves go up. You will see the possibilities developing that were not there, whether you're Venezuela or whether you are Russia, et cetera, and other, of course, other many, many developing countries. So in thinking about, analytically speaking, the classification as to how do we look at countries, I think it is important to classify countries in two different ways, in two different dimensions. One is the vulnerability position of the country to begin with. And when I say the vulnerability position of the country, what I mean is looking at the poverty level. I'm not going to use the vulnerability in terms of internal and external balances, clearly. That would not be my starting point. It would rather be the configuration of growth pattern in the country and poverty. So that nexus will bring me to some countries where I have high growth, but poverty rates remained high, inequality remained high, employment generation was not sufficient. You take, for example, India. And when you look at the formal sector job creation, it has been minuscule. Friends and many colleagues that are here have been telling me it has been in the media, it has been in reports, actually in government reports, that this has been the case. That position of a country is very different from one that has been experiencing growth and healthy employment conditions. So one set of considerations is the vulnerability of the country in terms of that. The second is the kind of fiscal space and policy space that each country is afforded in order to be able to react to what is happening, to react to a crisis. And at the very minimum, one can say that any time that you have a crisis, you must have counter-cyclical policy. As Jan said yesterday, it is not enough to have counter-cyclical policy. You must have targeted expenditures. Nonetheless, there are countries that are highly dependent on ODA, highly dependent on remittances, highly dependent. Okay, so where we locate women in terms of their vulnerabilities will depend on where they found themselves, country, sector of employment, poverty levels that the country experiences, and ability of the country to be able to react to the crisis. So with this classification in mind, I will give the microphone to Yassin to give us an introduction on the routes of transmission, and I will continue later.
Okay, so the other thing we need to recognize, and I think we talked about it very much, was that even within countries that are very dependent on ODA, for example, or remittances, there are different levels of vulnerabilities between women, between different categories of people. And given that, we need to also understand where people are located. Are they inside in the market, in formal market, informal market? So we try to really look at different routes of transmission in terms of, first of all, markets. financial market, goods and services market, and also employment, not only labor market, but employment and work. And also look at social reproduction. And in doing so, we look at countries through, for example, finances, and finance in a larger form. In terms of, you know, ODF, foreign direct investment, what does it mean? What does a diminution of foreign direct investment mean for a developing country, for a country that is that didn't receive a lot of FDI but has made a lot of efforts in creating an environment attracting foreign direct investment? A country that is certainly going to be going back to the IMF, what does it mean? What does it mean of a country that is has been receiving a lot of foreign aid and foreign direct investment? When now we know that the G20, first of all, the G8 Gleneagle commitments have not been met, and that the G20 commitments will certainly not be met given the pressure of these developed countries now that they are facing. So what does it mean also for remittances? Because we know that now for the past 10 years, countries like Sub-Saharan Africa have been receiving a lot of more and more remittances from migrant workers, and especially women migrant workers. So what does it mean for this country and for communities of people in rural areas, in urban informal settlement, in urban slums, women, head of household that depend on how husbands that have been overseas for 5 years working, sending money, but also families that are depending on women that might go are migrant workers. And also for governments that depend a lot on export revenues and that have been also making a lot of effort to really attract export revenues. So all of these forms of financial resources that were flowing into countries and now are being really decreasing at a very fast pace. What does it mean? I listened yesterday to a very interesting presentation of colleagues, feminist economists from Mexico who came to UNIFEM, and we're just kind of looking at stimulus packages and showing how much government stimulus package in Mexico was really giving a lot of leeway and cutting taxes for corporations. And this, of course, represents an opportunity cost for government to losing resources. What does it mean in what government loses resources? Where does the cut goes to in terms of the crisis? And also, we talk a lot now about, you know, financial institution and microcredit institutions that are less and less now, you know, lending money to women. So what does it mean also for? So these are different forms of route of transmission that we don't want. We want to ask the questions. We also look at, you know, goods and services market in terms of so many now factories closing down, production slowing down. We look at also what does it mean for government, for access to services, when government is really cutting down the amount of taxes that corporation pay, means government is losing resources and also increasing cost recovery, user fees, et cetera. And of course, the impact on social reproduction, on women's unpaid work. And also a question that we need to start asking now, people call coping mechanism, but what are the substitution effects of women that are head of household, of poor families that are now facing with very much lower income? What do they have to let go in order to survive? So these are very, in terms of nutrition, in terms of access to services, sending children to school, in terms of paying for vaccination for a child, in terms of choosing to pay for a small fee to access water, safe water, or going to a safe well to get water, leading to waterborne disease. All of these are, you know, substitution effects in terms of decision that are taken within the household as an impact of the crisis. And what these are questions that we need to ask when we're looking at the micro level of the impact. And work and employment. Of course, formal employment. And I think it would be interesting to always look at the linkages. A linkage between formal and informal employment. The informalization of employment and work because people lose jobs. So always see the linkage between paid work, formal employment, also paid work in informal employment. And also migrant workers that are not able to go outside the country, but also those that are coming back, because we know that there is a lot of migrant workers coming back. And one aspect that we are not looking at, a lot of students are going back home. This is very interesting. It's very positive, I think, in one hand, but they're going back home also with the pressure of, you know, with also looking for jobs, because now in many countries they're not employed. The U.S. is not giving all this OPT, and I see now many, many students going back home, which is very good, but also what is available there in terms of the labor market and access to employment. And the more informalization of women's work, because also we know that a lot of informal employment are also linked to formal jobs. For example, factories, women selling water outside factories, women, all of these jobs. What does it mean when factories close for households? So, and also the whole idea of labor, of negotiation, of accessing to decent work, organizing with the pressure of employment is on people. What is the space for negotiation that is left for especially women? And also the question of security, health, and also leading to, you know, the whole issue of link between work, employment, and health. So what I don't want to get to that, but I want to first of all, you know, ask you to think about these questions that we are asking and reflecting back to your own reality, your own work space, and what have you been observing, what have you been hearing, what is happening in communities that you work with or in your country. And so we put a series of questions that are not exhaustive, but you may not answer all of them. But we felt that it was a very good starting point of reflection, is at least asking this question concretely, or trying to see how you can take a few minutes to answer one, two, three, or all. But I think it will be too much. If you choose to answer one or two already, it's good.
I want to say, if you allow me, I would like to take a few minutes before you concentrate on the questions. Okay, if this was my classroom, I would say turn the page around right now. Okay, so please do not start looking at the questions yet. Let me have still your attention for a few minutes. There are certain things that I believe are quite stylized, because we have talked about the outlines of the crisis a little bit as to what the policy space is and how different countries can react, the constraints that they face, and we will go more into it. But what is it about gender, really? What makes the impact different on men and women? And what do we know from the past? One thing that we know is that when the crisis kicks in, behaviorally, if you remember, that was sort of the second pillar of what I was talking about earlier this morning. Behaviorally, men and women do not react in quite the same ways. In terms of supply of labor, at the time that jobs are being lost, what we observe is the entry, actually, of women massively in the markets, both formal and informal. And some would say that it is because the women will accept any working conditions, any kinds of wages, and at the same time, I mean, I'm not a behavioral economist, but at the end of the day, the priorities of securing reproduction and smoothing consumption is very, very high for women. And they will accept all kinds of conditions in order to do that. When it comes to the supply of unpaid work, what do we know? We definitely know that it increases. So what Yasin was referring to in terms of absorption, when social services are being cut, et cetera, women come in and they fill in the gaps. What we know is that in terms of the working time allocation of women, that will expand a lot more from women than men. But that always comes at an expense, because free time and rest time and reproduction self-care is always a residual. So we do see deterioration of certain indicators for women. Secondly, we do know that it will be girls that will be first withdrawn from school. Not in all countries. I don't want to have these sweeping generalizations. But the effect will be felt differently on female and male, on girl child and on boy children. The third thing I want to bring to your attention is that when it comes to the when it comes to migrant workers and when it comes to the income that has been received by these communities that rely very much so on migrant workers, I want to look at the other end of it. What happens at times of prosperity? At times of prosperity, you have the Philippines, you have Mexico, you have many countries. I'm not using quantitative information for the presentation, but I cannot help myself but say this. There are countries where the remittances earn the foreign exchange for the country much more so than exports. So if sometimes I think of it as follows. Suppose that you have one corporation in the Philippines. Okay, it is not one corporation, it is millions of migrant workers that bring in all the exchange so that you don't need to borrow in the open markets, let alone that many countries cannot borrow, would not be eligible to borrow, or would have to go through incredible conditionalities. And you bring all of this income. And then there is a crisis. And the crisis hits everybody, including that one company, one sector, that the country has been relying on for the last 10 years when it was a time of prosperity to bring in all of what is needed in terms of reserves. What do you think the power position would be of that corporation, and what do you think the power position will be of the hundreds of thousands of migrant workers? It's clearly very different. So is this something that we can suggest? Is there something positive that we can suggest at a time of crisis for rethinking of what do we do on the upswing? And yes, of course, you can have special banking arrangements where there are benefits that are derived by the communities, by the migrant workers, where a portion of what at least the country would have to have paid in order to borrow the money will go towards enlarging the social safety nets at times of crisis. Well, it is an area for us to think about. The crisis is very recent, and we cannot say that we know the outcomes. So the list of issues that we're bringing up is suggestive. And I want to finish this commentary because I would really like to ask what is happening in your own environment, in your own experience. I want to finish this with the issue of employment. Well, there are countries that are involved in high-end agricultural exports. They're being hit really badly right now. There are countries that rely on tourism. Very, very difficult position that they're in. And of course, wherever you have co-assignment, I'm not sure that I'm saying this correctly in English, although I live here, but where you have co-assignment production, those countries are being affected a lot. And of course, manufacturing, you have several countries in Asia that are being affected and in Latin America. Now, the next question, of course, is, okay, so what do you do? What do you do in the short term? What do you do in the medium term? What do you do in the long term? So I have read several suggestions. One very strong suggestion is that in the medium term, in the short term, you have to expand social safety nets. You have to expand both cash transfers, and you have to engage immediately and rapidly in massive employment creation programs, government-run employment creation programs. I'm not going to go into the question of finance. That is for somebody else to handle. Pinaki, who will be talking not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow. So this is one suggestion and one recommendation that is out there. The second, of course, is when we think of the macroeconomic environment, is how to get rid of conditionalities, even on a temporary basis. First of all, countries are suffering right now, as everybody acknowledges, for no fault of their own and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, the international financial institutions are not coming up with some suggestions and recommendations to ease the burden on countries that badly need the financing. The medium or longer run sort of idea that is floating around, and I think Jayati Ghosh, when she joins us, we'll talk about it, is that this is a very strong wake-up call. I was speaking with several people that you met, both from UNIFEM and from the Regional Bureau for Latin America and the Caribbean, the United Nations Regional Bureau. And I think there was something, it was as if I hit people on the head when I said the development strategy has to be rethought. The fact that you rely so much on exports has to be rethought. But the economies structurally now, several economies, have been so much aligned and arranged in ways that you rely on tourism. You do rely on commercial real estate development because you are selling these condos to people in your country. And you do rely a lot on exports. So this is not something that can happen overnight, right? But it is something that comes as a wake-up call, and Jayati will talk a lot more about it. So the diagnosis of what is the impact of the current crisis needs to be along the lines of both paid and unpaid work in all the sectors so that we can capture exactly who is receiving the brunt of it. Secondly, we have to realize that it is impossible to react to the crisis when we are accepting the same constraints. And you have the IMF speaking on one side of their mouth. There are articles, actually we should print some of them, where they say the responsibility is communal, we have to have global reactions and blah, blah, blah. And they are lending money through the same facilities as before. And they to this day, they have not set up a special facility. So we really need to raise hell about it because there is nothing you can do unless you have that kind of coordination and relaxation of constraints in a country. And third, we have to think about spaces that we can enter and say, okay, now what happens on the next phase? Because suffering will be around, the crisis is with us, but then what do we want to put in place? And I think beyond reforming the financial institutions, which they are not being reformed really, as you know, with the document that came out of the UN recently. In addition to that, there are other things that we need to be putting on the table. So diagnosis is one issue. Secondly, recommendations and what we would like to be proposing is something else, is the second issue to be talking about. Thank you. The list is not to be filled out today. It is to really stimulate some reflection about all of the things that we will be doing in the next week and a half, over a week and a half, actually here. These are issues that will be addressed, we will be discussing. So this is a tentative sort of list, and the kind of input and feedback that we would like to start having so that we can generate some discussion around it is amending the list. Right? It is the purpose of the list is not to only think and fill in what you know so that we can talk to each other, but it is rather within each regional and country-specific context, how do you amend the list? What is missing? What would you be adding if you wanted to have a diagnostic tool? Because this is a questionnaire, not in its entirety, we have modified it a bit, but this is a questionnaire that was distributed in advance of a paper that was produced by UNDP on the impact of crisis along gender dimensions, which some of you have seen because it was included in the reading list that we forwarded. And in preparation for that, I asked them actually to distribute a bunch of questions so that I know what is happening at the moment. The one has no idea what is happening. So this list, though, needs to be amended, needs to be expanded, and it will be very, very interesting at the end of the 2 weeks to have some time where we can discuss the amended list. Okay, so I think we can. Should we? Yes. Yeah. Let's.
Yeah, I think we can
ask for interventions and.
Yeah, if you have any questions and regarding the list regarding
some initial feedback.
Yes, that would be interesting. But okay. Especially
we can spend another 15 minutes perhaps to.
Yeah, we can spend, but...
Huh?
On the list?
Yes?
Yeah, I think many of these questions do not have any yes and no answer. For example, has the government enforced budget cuts? If we look at the aggregate data in case of India, there has been huge
Can you use a microphone?
Yeah.
That'd be great, Pinaki.
Thank you.
after 2009-10 interim budget shows an increase in fiscal deficit to the order of 5.6% of GDP, which used to be 2.53%. But this is primarily due to the tax cuts. But if you ask me specific sectoral cut in expenditure also, you see that there hasn't been much of a cut on expenditure. But the increase in the fiscal deficit is primarily because of the increase, reduction in the tax rates as a measure of stimulus. So there has been a huge fall in tax revenue because they have given a lot of tax cuts to the tax cut as a measure of fiscal stimulus. So I was thinking that if given these questions, if
could
each
you make
country
a recommendation though?
Yeah.
If you were to amend it, because you do want to
reformulate it.
No, what I'm saying is that if keeping these questions, if each country can write one page write-up, and then based on that, we again reformulate these questions and try to put these questions. So that would be.
That's a great.
One page, not a very big write-up. Keeping these all these questions in mind.
That's an excellent idea.
Sure.
That's an excellent idea. Okay.
I have just one small point, that the impact would be sector-specific and region-specific.
Mm-hmm.
The impact will not be on the overall economy because all these economies are not highly globalized economies. Mm-hmm. So it will be sector-specific, region-specific. So why not collect information on that as to what kind of sectors and what kind of regional
impact
is in
there? That is asking specifically.
Here there are general questions, what has been the impact on government spending or unemployment and so on and so forth. But what I'm trying to say is that the impact would be sector-specific, limited to some sectors, limited to some regions.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
So why not list out those things rather than having an overall data or something?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's great. So we have two recommendations. One, to be a lot more sector-specific.
You mean region-specific within the country or region-specific?
Within the country.
Okay. Other suggestions? Please, yes.
The second one on ODA, has official ODA decrees. I think that we need also we should say something about it because most of the debt relief come from bilateral partners. Comes from bilateral partners. I'm just thinking, from UNIFEM perspective, we were used to get some money from Iceland. And Iceland has, they've got so many problems themselves that obviously ODA is affected, but also debt relief schemes are affected.
So for it to also be country, to have more specificity, essentially, the ODA, is that what you're recommending?
From the point of view of receiving countries.
Yes. It's debt relief because it's usually most of the debt relief is done bilaterally. So, like Norway at some point removed $80 million that were borrowed by
Sudan.
So
this is for HIPIC countries. This is for countries that were under PRSP, under HIPIC, highly indebted poor countries debt relief initiative really under, multilateral debt, but also countries that bought the debt back so that, countries can benefit from debt relief. And certain countries now, I'm just trying to explain, like Iceland, are now, really stopping now the debt relief they used to give because of the financial crisis. So the answer would be, have the countries that used to benefit from debt relief are no longer benefiting from debt relief. But so do you know any country that used to give that relief that has cut it?
Right.
Because from UNIFEM perspective,
really
they know that Iceland is no longer under the countries that are providing that relief.
Mm-hmm. The one on migration, where you put has migration decreased, my feeling is that migration is very much affected by getting visas and things. And where I would see more difficulty is about migrants getting jobs in where they are. I think that it's not that much the number of people migrating, but the ones who are already in the U.S., how are they affected?
But some also are coming back. Migrant workers now are returning home. So both, we need to look at both.
Ah, okay, you're talking about returning
home
reverse.
And also getting employment.
But also migration is not thought of exclusively across countries. You have rural-urban migration. Brazil is being hit incredibly in that sense right now. So it is migration in the larger sense. But okay, that's point well taken. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. China, the same thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Just one last thing.
Taco, you haven't finished.
Yeah, yeah. About has the demand for export products decreased? I would say that all the countries exporting things like precious stones or gold, you know,
minerals,
like the Southern African countries have huge problems, all the luxury goods, but also flowers from Ethiopia and Kenya would really be in trouble. I've seen in some countries that there's some assembling factories for cars.
Mm-hmm.
And given the way the market is, I would also believe that they might have some difficulties.
Mm-hmm. So you're answering the question right now.
Yes, she is.
It's part, I just wanted to say everything I had to say. Some are about completing some dimensions, but there are things which are more answers to the questions.
Yeah. Essentially, the export bit is way too open-ended. And it has to be
3, 4, and then we go to the back. I'll bring it to you. Maybe this one can.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I had one concern relating to the question on migration, as well as the question that follows, how has that affected remittances? And while it is two different questions and both are related, remittances is definitely, you know, directly related to migration. I'm wondering if you can have some amount of separation, because remittances is based on migrants who are based on workers who have already migrated and not necessarily coming back, going back to their home country. And therefore, what is sent home, the rates of remittances would decrease if, you know, based on whether they've lost their jobs or how, you know, how their work conditions or how their life, you know, their economic conditions has been contracted based on the crisis. So I think that should be just one separate question from the direct question about whether or not migration has decreased. And asking the question about whether or not migration has decreased should be related to finding out some information on return migration and going back home. So put those two together, and then probably in the next box have the question about reduction of remittances. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There can be a question about access to credits. Is there increase or decrease in credits of the banking system? What type of credits, consumer credits or corporate sector credits? Who receives the credits? Can, if possible, not for Turkey, but if it's possible, who receives the credits in terms of gender? So it gives an indication how the real economic activity works during the crisis now.
Okay, go ahead.
And also, what type of government responses have been put in place for the crisis? Something that we've already covered is that many of the tools that are being proposed.
A little, I cannot hear a little bit.
What type of government policies have been put in place for the crisis, if any? You know, whether that's strengthening social safety nets or things like
Isn't
more
there
macro.
A question like that? Is there? No. It's not? Oh, it must be on the... Measures taken by? Yeah. Okay. We need to include the word government there, but because when we talk about the measures taken, that's what we had in mind. Okay.
Okay. So we finish here. There's one hand here, and then we can go to the back, please. Sorry. And
I have already filled this the form because Rania have already sent me the head of time. Yeah, so I just asked
questionnaire.
Yeah, so I just asked to the students, graduate student, help me to fill the form. But most difficult question about gender. Because the financial crisis is a new situation, so there's no very new statistics data about that one, especially the gender. If the related gender issues, it's very difficult to get the data. And even the, just already mentioned the migration workers, we have the data have already through the field survey, but the estimate data. Yeah, not from the very details, so from the Statistics Bureau.
Mm-hmm. It's not coming, the data is not there yet.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, it is probing us to ask also what kind of data would you want?
Yeah.
So it could be that the data exists or it doesn't exist. In other words, we need to operationalize. Okay, there is an analytical vision. Then one looks at the macroeconomic constraints and then some paths of transmission, which is not an exhaustive list, clearly. We just had a very short introduction. But from there, you will need both the data and also you will need to kind of operationalize sort of the kinds of questions and kinds of information that you will need in order to inform whatever modeling whatever issues you want to have on the table and to address them. So there are a lot of things that are missing, and that's exactly the idea. The idea is for someone to read this and say, you're not addressing this aspect here. We need this kind of data in order to answer it. That dimension is not applicable at all. So it's sort of that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But this is a good opportunity also to kind of see if you're in government or you're in university, how can you influence, because we're getting fresh information, how can we really request that this information be disaggregated? Mm-hmm. I think this is a very good opportunity to get information, because, people, governments or whether institutions are really now getting the data, getting the information, and how can we, influence this information right now so that we can disaggregate
Exactly.
would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the back.
Mira.
Well, when it comes to the unemployment and it's increasing in what sectors as well, maybe it should to know as well the education level. Because, for example, in Palestine now with the crisis, the more the women are educated, the more the unemployment rate above among them. Because when it comes to who has to work, the woman will just give the opportunity to the man, so they stay at home. And it has been always a problem in Palestine, but now with the crisis and the migrants from Gulf states coming back to Palestine, it became even worser, because they have doctorates, they have masters, but they don't work, they stay home. Mm-hmm. So maybe as well, if other countries as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the back.
Could you please explain me the last question? I don't understand what you want with this. The last question.
Yeah, I don't have one of these with me, but.
How are women's men's coping with the both concerns?
How are women and men coping with the above concerns? Yes. Okay. So we can pass the microphone and go.
Yes.
Go this way. Okay.
Shall I?
I have two comments, and that was triggered by the issue of remittances, which I'm basically not a specialist on. But I wanted to point that in the last ECLAC review, Ocampo mentioned that although remittances was thought to be one of the first channels that would impact Latin American economies that were dependent on that, because of the valuation, the income that, I mean, the purchasing power of those lower remittances was going to be higher for some families. So, in fact, this list is all Q. We don't have peace here. We don't have the prices, and one price is exchange rate. So even though we can keep on focusing on quantities and adjustments of all this list of quantities, we may have a set of arrows that fit in the sense that a measure could be, for example, alter exchange rate, but then that feedbacks into some issues. So it was only picking what Jacine presented at the outset. Is first, this seemed first round. Mm-hmm. And we need to have second order effects that might be covered with arrows going back.
Yes, I would like to say two things that I consider is very important, because in this moment, I would like to say everybody thought that when with a financial crisis, remittance were going to come less in Mexico, especially in Mexico. And seeing right now the central bank remittance, we only have a variation very, very relative of 3.57% less than the same 3 months of the last year. The other thing is that we thought that all the Mexicans were coming to all the Mexicans from USA were coming, and they didn't, because they are familiar nets that you can stay, and because they prefer to stay even if they don't have the work, that come to Mexico. The other thing is that they they have low payments. They have been reduced some of the salaries, but they continue sending the remittance, because the devaluation was between the September until 3 months ago, the devaluation was around from 10 pesos a dollar. We were in December 16 pesos a dollar. But what happened, and I think this is very important, it is not the same Mexico that it is just very near the border of USA, that maybe Ecuador or Peru, okay, because they are very far. We have 80 billion, you say? No, yes, $80 billion of reserves. Besides that, we have the $47 billion that the IMF gave it to us. And besides that, a swap of the Federal Reserve. So we have right now $150. And you said, well, why do we need so much? What are we going to do with that money? And that money, you know, for what is it? It's because everybody is changing their money in American money. So they are coming back, because the other thing, and this weekend we are having elections. The second is that most of the entrepreneurs have loans. And besides that, we have to, well, they have to pay that loans. But the other thing is that most of the treasurers of the enterprise put their money in Lehman Brothers. And besides Lehman Brothers, and all in the in the derivatives. So there is, for example, a very big entrepreneur with this Comercial Mexicana, it is like Walmart. They put all the money in Lehman Brothers. One of the treasurers put that in. So when Lehman Brothers came down, they lost a lot. So that's why the Mexican government is trying to help the big entrepreneurs. And beside that, I don't think the problem is that the other other thing that I want to say, that the decrease of the GDP, it was only between January and April of 8.2. We are just very close as the first trimester of 1995 when we had the banking crisis. And this is going to be huge because during the end of April and the first 2 weeks of May, all the economy, we stopped the economy because the H1N1. So probably we will, the GDP will come less. So I don't know what will happen, but the thing is that we have, it is not only economy, it is also the game, that how Mexico is very close to the USA, and how it is, I don't know if it is a privilege or it is the contrary, but that's why that sometimes you have to see other things, not only the economy variables. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. My suggestion among the questions is we generally think child labor is separate from gender, but it actually is not. So maybe has there been increase in child labor with gender? What sectors?
Yeah, I have also quite practical suggestion. We don't know much about the impact. We don't know how this gender disaggregated data affect employment and unemployment. So the question could be, you know, does government report regularly on the impact? And I think it should be the obligation of the government. Excellent. Because I've seen only one very short report of the UK, and this was on the impact on race, and but it was really very thin. Gender was half a page, and there was some data, but it should be made obligatory, and UN system should really mm-hmm. push. I believe this is part of the obligations under MDGs and so on.
We're coming back.
Okay, I would like to suggest something about the approach of this. You know, if somebody is interested in conducting a study, quick study, because we require quick something right. You know, as to what is happening. And that is something very important. And I'm telling this because we have just completed within 3 months, 2.5 months rather, a quick study of 7 sectors in 5 states in India. To understand what is the impact of globalization. I think in that context, what we started with was we examine the overall data to see which are the sectors and which are the regions which are affected. This was done through analysis of some secondary data on export data, financial sector data. Labor Bureau had conducted a very small survey using that and official data, we identified those sectors. And then in those sectors, we selected those sectors, and those sectors we had a common approach which contained 5 things. First was what has been the impact on the sector of the global crisis. So in terms of data, what has been the impact, which are the regions, what kind of impact that is creating a sector profile, so to say, of the impact. Second thing was we could not cover the entire sector, so we had to select some centers of that sector. So the second task was to identify the sector and prepare a sector center profile. For example, in diamond industry, Surat is a major center, so we selected Surat. That was one thing. So center sector, that is another step. The third step was that we wanted to understand what's happening, and that has to be that was to be done not by systematic sample survey, because that's not the only thing and quick thing. So what we did was that we had large number of discussions with officials, with industry people, with labor leaders, etc., and focus group discussions. Focus group discussions with small producers, marginal workers, because the focus of the study was workers and small producers. But we also discussed with sector leaders, etc., government policymakers, as to what kind of things are happening and all that. So we understood what kind of policies are being implemented and what are the major issues through focus group discussion. And then we conducted a primary survey. That was a kind of a sample survey, but purposive sample survey. We had identified typologies based on our discussions, and in those typologies, we elected samples. So there were samples in each sector of about 200 households or something. So in all, we had about 3,000 households, seven sectors, so something like that. And then we had case studies. So each sector, we had some six case studies to understand. And at the end of it, we try to understand as to what has happened. And then we found out a major finding. I'm not going to elaborate on that, but our major finding was that the impact was very severe, but it was sector-specific and region-specific. But the impact was severe because we had several limitations from the domestic market also, that there was no social protection, there were health and educational problems, etc. So all those data we have as to whether children were withdrawn from school, what kind of, or they were, children started working, whether women started working, or they took up more work, and those kind of things, as well as impact in terms of indebtedness, poverty, income, wage rate, employment status, skill status, all those things we have. So it's a report which gives overall picture of what has happened to the sectors after the crisis. And it has very important policy implications. So we have submitted those implications to the government of India. And we hope that they will consider some of these things, because the implications also include challenge the dependence on exports for economic growth. Kind of, you know, there is no. It should be available very soon, because this was sponsored by UNDP and Government of India. So it should be available very soon, I think. It's in all maybe 200 pages, 300 pages. But each sector report is of 30, 40 pages. And then there is a first chapter and the last chapter which elaborates on other things. Yeah. Yeah, but I have executive summary. I have executive summary of that also. So
unbeknownst to some of you, I have proposed to Indra that she's going to present this at the conference, but I think it would be much better if she also presented it here, because this is a different kind of context. So I was proposing that perhaps, and the earlier we do it, the better it would be, that on Thursday, on this Thursday, that we schedule a session. I was going to say tomorrow, but tomorrow she's already doing two separate sessions. She's in two separate sessions. So maybe on Thursday. Indira? Okay, but I was going to propose that at lunchtime on Thursday, we have a working lunch, and Indira can present her the methodology they used and so on. So I've been very excited about it. I think that will be very inspiring. So we could sort of, yeah, do that. Yeah, great. Thank you.
Very useful. I think we can now try to see how we can integrate all of these points so that we can come up with another version of the questionnaire that integrates all of these points and suggestions. And also, as we go along, you may have some other, you know, points that come to mind that you want to add. I think this is a process, and as we go along with the discussion, you know, things come. Points that you want to add, I think that will be very interesting at the end, in at least even before the end of the 2 weeks. By the end of the week or beginning of next week, we can see what do we come up with. Thank you very much. It was a very good night. Thank you.